This is the story of positive deviance. The story of how a simple, counterintuitive approach transformed the lives of children suffering from malnutrition, empowered their families, and changed the way that aid agencies work all over the world. In this episode, that story and how it provides hope for all of us facing intractable societal problems. You're listening to I Heart This, everybody. I'm Ben Lord. Let's talk about what we love. Sometimes the news feels like a dangerous place to go. Every day, a new disaster. I tuned in a few days ago to see a family torn apart. And a few days before that, it was people cut off from the life-saving medicines they depend on. And before that, it was children killed in a vengeance war that no one can seem to stop. Often I go to the news because I feel guilty for not going, as if somehow being an informed citizen could stop the avalanche of awfulness. Sometimes I feel like it's my responsibility to bear witness to the shittiness of the world, but it's hard to believe that bearing witness actually does anything. Disease, injustice, racism, war, these are intractable societal problems. People way smarter than me have devoted their lives to solving them. And so often, their efforts look like bailing the ocean with a pail. It is easy to feel defeated before I even begin trying to make a difference. But as easy as it is to believe, that kind of defeatism isn't the truth. Or at least it's not the whole truth. And today, I need a story that reminds me of that. This story takes place in Vietnam about 35 years ago. Then, as now, Vietnam was a country beset with the kinds of intractable problems that you see on the news. And one of those intractable problems was malnutrition. Nearly half of Vietnam's children were malnourished. Malnutrition is intractable mostly because it is so complex. What causes malnutrition isn't a lack of nutritious food. What causes malnutrition is poverty. To solve the roots of malnutrition, you'd have to solve sweeping inequalities in global food distribution systems, and poor sanitation, and access to clean water, and access to education. The Vietnamese government at the time knew that it was up against an intractable problem, and it knew it needed help. But many people in the government were reasonably skeptical of do-good missions from the outside. Other programs had come and gone. They'd passed out formula, or built some infrastructure, and then they'd go away, and there'd be no more formula, and no one who had the know-how or the money to keep the infrastructure working. So when they invited Jerry and Monique Stern in to open a chapter of the nonprofit Save the Children in Vietnam, the foreign minister gave them a chilly welcome. They had 6 months to show they could make a real and lasting difference, he told them. And then they'd have to get out. Jerry later said that they felt like orphans at the airport. They had little money, tiny staff, a demanding and somewhat hostile patron, little knowledge of the land or the language, and no preconceived plan of what to do. But the clock was ticking. Someone who studied development in a university might have been tempted to start by analyzing the systemic roots of malnutrition. All the things I just mentioned about sanitation and global food supplies. I think that's what I would have done. But instead, the Sterns pretty much ignored them. Later, they would explain that even though those things were true, they were useless. There was no way they could address malnutrition by fixing poverty. Not in 6 months, anyway. Instead, they would have to find a way of addressing malnutrition in the midst of poverty. But how? Inspired by some recent nutrition research, they decided to try something very different from the typical NGO program. They decided to start by making observations, to just listen instead of talk. And so the Sternins headed out to one of the poorest regions of the country and got to work. They started by partnering with a local women's union. And then together, they all set about asking one question. In this village, a village where some 64% of the youngest children were malnourished, are there any families who face the same challenges as everyone else, endure the same poverty, and live in the same constraints, and yet have still managed to raise well-nourished kids? So the women in the union went out to measure the height and weight of the local children, and the results intrigued everyone. Yes, there were indeed healthy, well-nourished kids who came out of poor households, households with no rich uncles or other advantages. Then, the women of the union worked with the Stearns to figure out how. It was like a scientific experiment. They studied the food habits of all the villages' families as a kind of control group. Then they compared the overall picture with what they called the positive deviance, the families that had somehow beaten the odds and had kids with healthy sizes and weights. And after they analyzed the data, the outlines of an answer began to form. In most households in the village, food was typically served in two meals over the day. Families took what they needed from a communal service, and the most important food was rice. But the families with well-nourished children had several key differences. One, instead of feeding their children twice a day, they fed them smaller meals more often, making it easier for their kids' small bodies to absorb the nutrients from what they ate. Two, they added tiny shrimp from the rice paddies and greens from plants like sweet potatoes to the food. Three, instead of letting kids fend for themselves at the communal food service, those families actively fed their kids. They would spoon out nutritious bits from the bottom of a bowl to make sure the kids got them. And four, they washed and had their children wash their hands. Wait, that's it? Is that all it really took? Could the difference between a listless, stunted, anemic kid and a thriving one really just come down to those simple changes? I imagine if it was me, that I'd immediately start knocking on doors and telling people all about the miracle solution that we had just found. But the Sternins and their partners didn't. And I love what they did instead. How many times in history have a group of well-meaning, comparatively fortunate people come into some formerly colonized part of the world and start handing out advice, running a program to fix what is broken? It's like the paid presenters who had been called into the schools I worked in to fix our broken test scores. And they would show us some revolutionary technique and the audience would applaud, and 6 months later, nothing had changed. Perhaps this is why the Vietnamese foreign minister's reception to save the children had been so cold. So instead of coming in with advice, Jerry, Monique, and the local partners operated under the assumption that just having knowledge wouldn't change behavior. If people were going to see how they could change their lives, they were going to have to live it. So instead of handing out sweet potato greens and lecturing people about hand washing, they invited mothers and their kids to dinner. They would invite groups of about 10 to come and cook together. To be a part of the meal, you had to bring your own greens to contribute. This puzzled folks. This wasn't what they expected, but maybe just out of curiosity, people showed up. Before the meal, the mothers and their children and the people from the women's union would wash their hands together. And as they cooked together, they added the ingredients that their guests had brought. And as they ate, they fed their children together. And the women from the union who had seen the evidence of these practices in the real lives of their neighbors told their guests the story of what they had learned. When I think of what that must have been like for the mom of a hungry kid, for a mom who felt helpless in the face of her poverty, who could see a way to help her child, who had just physically done the thing that could make that difference herself, and to think to herself that her kid could be okay because of something she could do. I imagine a strange and powerful feeling of relief and power and gratitude. When I watch the news, I feel stymied and angry and sad and helpless. And I guess that makes sense because the news is nothing more than an endless stream of updates about intractable problems. When I give my attention to the news, I am giving my attention to tragedy. Now, I know that's important. If I don't give my attention to problems, I'll never solve them. But the problem isn't the whole story. Out there in the real, unreported, everyday world are people who are making something just a little bit better. Even if it's just getting a more nutritious meal to their kids. And that's never going to show up on the news. but it happens, and it matters. And if we are paying attention to those things, sometimes the intractability of those problems begins to unravel. In the case of the Save the Children nutrition program in Vietnam, finding those bright spots, those positive deviants, solved so many things at once. Not because it fixed poverty or sanitation or global injustice, but because it gave people practice and insight and hope. In that Vietnamese village, malnutrition dropped by 85%. Now, 85% is just a number, but think for a moment of all the real children that that number contains. From there, the Sternens brought the approach to four other villages. And they didn't just recreate the hand washing and kid feeding and sweet potato greens. They recreated the whole process of finding the positive deviants and the bright spots in those villages. And the solutions weren't the same in every village. In some places, families nourished their kids with sesame seeds. And in some, it was peanuts. And in some, it was snails. Each of these villages found its own way and experienced similar drops in malnutrition. And then each village, in turn, became a kind of living university, training the villages nearby until the model extended through hundreds of them. And millions of lives had been touched. Decades later, that knowledge is still alive in the countryside of Vietnam. Mothers have taught their children, who've taught their children in turn. It is a source of well-being, but it is also deservedly a source of pride. We did this thing. We, ourselves, using our knowledge and our hands, for our kids. When I only focus on the problems of the world, it is easy to assume that people are flawed, that everything just sinks to the lowest common denominator, and that cynicism is just realism. And I come by that problem orientation honestly. Evolution has biased my attention to focus on problems. And that's a good thing, I think. Focusing on problems is what got my ancestors to address them. And addressing problems increased the chances that they and I would survive. But as adaptive as that bias has been, it is still a bias. It is just as blinding as its opposite. That comforting but illusory belief that since everything's worked out okay in the past, that it's probably going to be just fine in the future. But when I think of the story of Save the Children's work on malnutrition in Vietnam, it reminds me that despair and denial are not the only options. We can instead turn our attention toward things that work. We can find neighbors whose kids look healthy and strong, and we can find out what they're doing differently. And we can also look to our neighbors that have reduced their carbon footprint or the frequency of emergency room visits or the number of kids who can't read. We can find people who have pushed back against autocrats and gained ground for democracy. And when we do, we can find a gritty and realistic kind of hope. A hope where our hands are dirty. A hope with direction for our minds and for our hearts. Even in an uncertain world where there is no guarantee of success, we can move forward with faith and confidence because if that mother has figured out a way to let her kid thrive, despite the challenges she lives with, well, then we can too. Hey, everyone. I've been making this podcast for well over 2 years now, and I am trying to follow my own positive deviance to make this podcast better for you by learning from the episodes that have been most impactful in the past, the ones that have most helped you to appreciate the world you live in and the people that you share it with. Now, if all I wanted to do was grow the biggest audience I could, the bright spots would be easy to find. The internet is built to feedback, listens, and views and subscribers. But the real positive deviance for me aren't necessarily the episodes with the most listeners. They're the ones that most deeply touch people's hearts. And the only way I know which episodes those are if you tell me. So please help me out. Let me know which episodes you liked best. Send an email to ben@iheartthispodcast.com. Post your favorites in the YouTube comments or leave a message on our I Heart This Facebook page. I would love to hear from you. I Heart This is written, edited, and produced by me, Ben Lord. Our logo was designed by Brian Imaro Cribbs. Our website is iheartthispodcast.com. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, be kind and be curious and be thankful.